SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevepick.com, streaming. A beautiful, my gosh, beautiful morning. Something tells me, based on the forecasting, this is the remnants before we turn toward the real winter, right? Yeah. I think this is the last hurrah of 50s and whatnot, but we'll make the most of it. And looking forward to what should be a good weekend. As I wrote yesterday when I put up the link for, you know, Gus went after Turfway and gave you a really good blueprint. It had a little miscue. He went 4 of 5, had a little miscue in terms of leaning a little too heavily on a single, but he really gave you a blueprint to the $8,000 payday. So great job by Gus. And when I wrote yesterday, I said, you know, this is leading into a nice weekend. I'll talk about Aqueduct. Thanks to everybody for the nice the nice appreciations. That was a really, we'll get to it with Nick, because I want Nick to talk about some decision-making and ticket building that I thought there's a valuable lesson from yesterday. One that paid off, and one that paid off okay, but could have paid, you know, even better. I'll get to that. But I made the suggestion, we've got a nice weekend here, and even without Southern California, which doesn't start until a week from Sunday, the 26th, there's still plenty to be interested in. And it starts tonight at Remington. And really starts this afternoon, as we knew from last week. You know, Friday at Oaklawn, Friday at Gulfstream has had some, you know, major horses. Looking forward to the Oaklawn conversations today, mostly in hour two. Hammer, I haven't texted Hammer, but Rick, if you're listening, we'll talk to you in an hour. 9 o'clock Central for Hammer at Hot Springs, and then later in the hour with Scott Shapiro. And Scott, you know, Scott's had a nice start to the Oaklawn season these first two weekends. So we'll get some opinions from him. And I don't know how far into Sunday anybody got, but as I told you the other day, when I noted, you know, particularly that maiden race, and there's more than just the maiden race, there's some very, very good horses and gatherings all weekend at Oaklawn, particularly that Sunday card really kind of popped. So we'll get some opinions from Shap. So Oaklawn on the front and back end of hour two. Mentioned Remington tonight, and you know, I went through that field, particularly of the Remington, you know, Springboard Mile. But Dale Day is going to join us in about 15 minutes, give or take. So we'll get Dale to provide some local color in OKC. Speaking of OKC, I assume anybody that's a basketball fan saw that Pelican Thunder ending. What was that? Must have been Wednesday night. That was something. If you didn't see it, look it up. Even if you're not much of a basketball fan, I just crazy that the Thunder tie the game with a, you know, almost a half court shot, and then the Pelicans walk off and win it with a three-quarter shot. Heaving. It was crazy. There's a number of Thunder have got a big following. And it's all CJ. CJ Mikowski is responsible, I think, for everybody being a Thunder fan. Anyway, we'll talk to Dale Day, the Dale Day, if you follow him on Twitter. Nick is going to join us. Nick Tamaro, of course, and it was his birthday the other day. Nick, I don't think he intended this, but Nick's 12/15 birthday is always on display. NTAM 1215. That was his first moniker on any website, and so I think by now everybody knows that Nick's birthday is on December 15th. And now we also know it's an important milestone for Tony Black and Chuck Baltazar, who fold that in as well on 12/15. We'll talk to Nick and get some New York ideas. You got a couple of the New York Stallion Series stakes tomorrow. Got some very good. It's a good state bred day, actually. There's a sprint allowance that closes out the card. Big bulky field. 13 with a betting entry. There's a 12 horse 2 year old state bred sprint that starts to pick five. Good open company second level allowance. Got a heavy favorite from Michelle Nevin, but good card. Again, I didn't really look much at today. I sort of knew that I was going to be hard-pressed to get a card out today to get any analysis. That's one of the reasons I jumped into yesterday. And I also thought that yesterday, you know, knowing you had that what felt like a good opportunity to single, that you could turn the pick five into a pick four. And the pick four, you could heavy it up. That's what we're going to talk about with Nick. So Nick will be here in this hour. Hour three will go to Hallandale Beach. Mike Welch, top of hour three for this first multi-stake, graded stake card day, as it were, at Gulfstream. I just actually spent the last 20 minutes kind of going through it, and we'll get Mike's added insights there. That Fort Lauderdale, as I mentioned yesterday, the Fort Lauderdale's really fun, and certainly it goes through Chad with Imperator and analyze it, but there's a couple of prices that are intriguing. So we'll get Mike's thoughts. The Suwannee River, too, is nice and balanced. And there's a couple of mid-priced long shots, including Proctor, the great one with Summering, 8-1. Jaramillo. And even though, you know, even though the Sugar Swirl came up a little short in terms of quantity, and not the Sugar Swirl, excuse me, the Harlan's Holiday. The Harlan's Holiday, it's a six-horse field, but not so easy. You got to make a decision about Mighty Heart moving back to the dirt after the season at Woodbine. That's not so easy. 9-5. Pletcher's got Fearless on the outside. So I'm curious what Mike's thoughts are in here. South Bend, 4-1 for Billy Mott. Eye of a Jedi for Steve Bedou. Seems competitive. And even the 10-1s are not outlandish in here. Sisterson. When is Sisterson ever outlandish? who Jack Sisterson, sort of an English Dallas Stewart. Yeah, right? Jack's got his reputation going that with the crazy, crazy prices and big spots. Anyway, it's a good card. It's a nice card at Gulfstream. I don't know why there's needed to be the 10 claimer to start the pick five, to be honest, but I guess it's strictly a quantity decision that was made, because it's a 12 horse field. with AEs. So I kind of skipped over that and go back to it, because I will probably I haven't decided yet what to work on, what to feature tomorrow, because I like the Oak Lawn action. I like the New York is nice and Gulfstream too, so lots to consider. So Mike Welsh, hour three, we'll check in with Bobby Shoemaker, see what Bobby's got for plays. He got a little shutout last week, but he'll come roaring back. I have every confidence. And we finally get a chance to catch up with Papo Morales, some form to win ideas. And we almost on Wednesday, we almost got that. Although that, you know, it's funny, that horse, as big as the pools are in Hong Kong, that the horse that we latched onto that ended up fourth, was a good enough idea, but I wouldn't have been that thrilled to see that price. Price went from literally from like 11, I think it was 11 to 1 when we first looked, 11, 12 to 1, ended up at 6 to 1. And that's in Hong Kong, where they got the enormous pool. So we'll check in with Papo. And there was a couple of people I've discovered this week that were at Tucson that I never saw. That, you know, of course, I'm on the early shift with the show, and then you go sit, you know, sometimes you go sit in the rooms and you don't, you know, you just don't see people, and you go in a different presentation and they're somewhere else. And I never saw Papa. He had some meetings and stuff too that he was involved in. So somehow we missed each other in Tucson. Let me give you the, because if I don't do it now, we won't get to it. As my guess, the specifics from from last night at Turfway. Where did it? Unbelievable! There it is. This drew a good pool, and the carryover added another 370,000, and it paid 8,148. So a nice payday, and it was it's funny, there were two prices in here. There were two 12-to-1 shots, or 12-to-1 shot, and a, what was the other one? The other one was $12. There we go. Noble Enterprise, that won the first, was a little under 5-to-1. Robbie Medina, this was a the 10 claimer, Noble Enterprise, and Sophie Doyle won easy, and was certainly, Gus, I know, put the horse on top, and was certainly one. The horse that won the second, the Ravelli, that I mentioned, that More Than Sole title, ended up as second choice. Franco's team took all the money, was 6-to-5, and you got 5-to-2, More Than Sole title. $7 in that second leg. The 12, the tricky horse was Bold Adventure. $26 for Del Loveland. Horse that this was a New Year's Day gelding, 5-year-old. This was a 15 claimer. Alex Achard aboard. And then a 5-to-1 shot. Can't Bet 'Em All. Jamie Grubbs. Ontario bred, Hillendale, Ontario, and Glen Sikora, and then 7-to-2 on Valentina Day for Ben Colebrook, the Cupid Filly. 7-to-2, 9-20. So you only had, I don't know if you had any. Let me see. That was a third choice in the nightcap. You had a second choice beat the 3-to-2 favorite in the fourth leg. Obviously, just so happens Bold Adventure was the longest shot on the board. How about that board in that third leg? What a crazy board. I hadn't noticed this. 7-to-2, 380-1, 4-1, 9-2, 720, 750, 890, and 12-1. The entire field was separated, unbelievable, by 8 points. That's crazy. That's a compact board for Bold Adventure, and that was the key. Second choice in the second leg, and 1, 2, 3, fourth choice. So the key to the $8,100 was, you know, whenever there's no favorites, whatever favorites, the least amount of favorites, the better the return. So congrats to those that hit. And when it came to New York, as I mentioned, we'll do it with Nick, but caught the $1,021 pick five. And here, there was just one. It's funny, I didn't think Eucharist was a hard horse to have. I don't know why Eucharist got ignored. 18-1, almost 19-1, paid $39.60. There's a storm brewing. I thought there were three horses that could win the first leg, and the 3-2 shot wins. I used four in the second leg. But Eucharist was an A for me. I mean, I thought it was, at 8-1 was a fun price, the kind of price you wanted to, you got to include in these sequences. Glory Road. Glory Road actually didn't take that much money. Ended up, third choice, just under 4-1. Paid $9.80. Hagler ended up being 2-5. Was going to be an entry with Life is Great, but Life is Great sat it out. That was the horse that seemingly you could lean on. And then in the nightcap, I tried to spread because I was hoping to catch a nice price in the nightcap. And of course, there was already the good price that it had landed earlier with Eucharist. But Convertible Freeze was okay. The Brad Cox, the Connect colt that actually Seth Klarman bred, and Convertible Freeze. Here again, there were three, four horses that seemed a little more likely in this maiden claimer. Jimmy Ryerson and Anthony Perry claimed the winner. Devious Banker was second, and Carl Grussmark and owner David Kramer grabbed that one. But Convertible Freeze came back to the dirt, and this was a mile. Brad Cox for GenStar, and $1,000. The topic I mentioned I want to discuss with Nick is I ended up making Convertible Freeze, who was my fourth choice, I put in the B section. I used as a B because I wanted to try to get one of the prices, Vibe Setter, the seven in there, the Charlie Baker. I wanted to, I didn't want to just take Devious Banker and Working Man's Dude, the two obvious players, the two of the obvious players. Convertible Freeze was another, but I wanted, you want to include prices. That's the key to making these sequences pay. So I used Vibe Setter as an A, and using Eucharist as an A obviously paid off, particularly for the pick four, which paid crazy. Pick four, we got 25-1 on our play in the pick four. It had a $10.50 ticket that paid $2.50, and I offered up a dollar play, which paid obviously $500 for $20. And the key was Eucharist. So I was aggressive enough to make sure to have Eucharist as an A in there, but making Convertible Freeze a B in the pick five, that prevented the $18 pick five ticket, from hitting for $1,000. And I always hope, I know that there's people with small budgets that they look at that ticket and they play the A ticket because you know, they're not going to spend $72 on pick four and pick five tickets. They play the all A tickets, and that's why I was pleased I had moved Convertible Freeze into the A's for the pick four. So I want to ask Nick his approach, because Nick is as good as anybody among prominent players. Nick Tamro's as good a decision maker when it comes to this as anybody. That's why he does so well in the live money in BCBC, because he can build those tickets and isn't afraid to lean heavily press essentially the A opinion. But you have to have the right decision essentially. So I want to ask Nick his thoughts. We're going to get Dale Day in here and get started. The pick four, 251.25, and that was for if you played the A's, it was a $10 play. That was great. So 25-1. That's you got to be happy with that kind of return. So we'll see if we can't keep augmenting the Christmas budget, the Christmas present budget. And while we wait for Dale, speaking of Christmas, what a funny story. People absolutely loved the Sean Clancy Bald Tree Odyssey. It was a hit. Let's just say that. And then I was quote unquote needling him a little online with that. That was not actually a picture. The picture that I put up yesterday, that was really not the Sean Clancy tree. Sean put a picture up of their actual, and you can see the tree. The tree kind of has a chunk out of it. One. That was a great story. Dale Day is joining us. The Dale Day, Remington Park. It's the big springboard mile card. Dale, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. Sorry we kind of missed connections yesterday, but
No. We're
doing it today for the big night tonight, and it'll be a great deal.
Absolutely. And one of the things yesterday, I couldn't help myself. I walked through the field, and I thought that this has potential to be, an influential springboard mile, and it feels like there's horses that are going places in this group. Let's start right with the feature.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting race. The past two, maybe even 3 years, Remington Park's been fortunate enough to pull one or maybe even two horses that dip their hooves into the Breeders' Cup waters prior to coming to the springboard night. That didn't happen this year. So when I first saw the draw, I was like, well, where are those horses? But it's kind of okay, because you have a really interesting mix in this race. It's, obviously at a mile, we drew a field of nine, which seems to be about the norm for this race. We usually get between eight and sometimes 10 or 11, but nine's good. And you have horses that have been in staked races, albeit some minor type stakes. And you have others that have been spectacular maiden winners in their most recent outs or something along those lines. And it's like they're trying to still figure out where everybody fits, right? So it's an interesting race with that type of mix. I'm most interested to see, and I picked this horse on top just because last year I wanted to pick Senor Buscador, and I did not. I picked him second because he was so impressive in the way he won his maiden at Remington Park a couple of weeks prior to the springboard. I went with Cowan, who had been in a Breeders' Cup race, Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, I believe it was. And Cowan ran well. He ran second, but he had a freight train blow by him with about 3/16 to go at the top of the stretch called Senor Buscador. Well, if that happens again, I'm going to be on the right train this time. Todd Fincher, who trained Senor Buscador, is coming back in again with a horse named Bye Bye Bobby, who they must think extremely highly of. Fincher works out of New Mexico more often than not. put this horse in a stakes race at Zia Park, again, a $50,000 stakes race, nothing, you know, six digits or seven digits or anything like that. But this horse has made his first start in a stakes race at Zia, a small field of seven, and comes from off the pace, not as far as Senior Buscador, but came from off the pace to get the win, closing in a six furlong race. Well-bred and well thought of, and an $870,000 purchase. So they plop this horse in a small stakes race. He handles that test no problem. Next race is the Springboard Mile back at Remington Park where they won last year. So Bye Bye Bobby caught my attention immediately just looking at all that as one that did win a stakes race, even a small one, coming in.
Yeah, and I respect Todd Fincher wherever he goes, and most normally we see him, you know, with Mr. Peacock and you know the super productive mare that you know is,
mm-hmm,
is
right. Yeah, that's not the case in this one. This is a high dollar purchase, but obviously they're hoping for bigger things in the next test tonight. And there's others that catch your eye in here. Classic Moment, Steve Ass, who's an all-time leading trainer in the world, and at Remington Park. Classic Moment, horse that wins, breaks the maiden last time, only by a half length, went 6.5 furlongs at Churchill Downs. No Lasix for two-year-olds in certain jurisdictions, in Kentucky being one of those. Oklahoma, you can still run on Lasix. He brings his horse in and is going to put Classic Moment on Lasix. Now, the Kentucky Derby qualifying points are available in the Springboard for those that don't run on Lasix. Now, I thought that was an interesting move because he was not on Lasix. Now he's going to be on Lasix. So, Steve, my guess is thinking, let's see how he does in a stakes race first time around. We'll worry about the non-Lasix trying to get points later on. So that's probably what's going on with this one in Classic Moment. But an LNN Racing part owner with Winchell Thoroughbred of Classic Moment, LNN, a state-based group out of Tulsa, so trying to win the big two-year-old race of the state for them in their home state. So that's kind of a neat move for them.
That's the Levinsons, and I didn't realize they were Oklahoma-based. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Levinson and Nelson, a couple of attorney powers. How about that?
Tulsa. If that's the criteria, you fold in Clark Brewster, and obviously the breeding ownership heritage is strong among the lawyers.
Clark's won this race in the past. He's not in this year, but I guarantee he'll be paying attention to it. So there's all kinds of angles. Saffy Joseph bringing a horse in that's running Florida bred races and done extremely well, impressive at Gulfstream Park. Make It Big, who will run out of post two, the morning line favorite at 7-2. Jose Ortiz coming in to Remington Park. I don't remember Jose coming in the past for one of our bigger days, be it Springboard or Oklahoma Derby Day. He may have been. I didn't dig that deep, but I noticed that immediately. The French Connection guys are all over the place. Julian Leperu will be here at the Springboard, riding Osborne for Ron Moquette. Other stakes races on the card. Giroux is involved. So, it's going to be a really big night and lots of interesting horses throughout. And the State Breds has not won the Springboard since 2011 with Ted's Folly. And there's a State Bred in the race tonight. Rowdy Rascal, Joby Castor, the trainer, has won three consecutive races, all against Oklahoma Bred Company. Two stakes, the Oklahoma Classics Juvenile back on October 15th, and then the Don McNeil Stakes at a mile, which is important, obviously same distance as tonight, back on November 12th. So trying to see what Rowdy Rascal has. He's going to be a little bit of a long shot, obviously, running in that deeper water tonight. But he deserves a shot. Why not? He's done what he can do in the state bred ranks. Now it's time to see what he can do in open company.
It feels like you're going to get some pace here, Dale, because there's a lot of stretch outs involved.
Yeah, absolutely. More often than not, you see ones all over the place in this two-year-old stakes tonight for the Springboard. That's what, again, led me to Bye Bye Bobby a little bit more, thinking there's going to be something for that horse to run at. Classic Moment likes to be forwardly placed. Make It Big wants to be forwardly placed. It came from a little bit off the pace last time. So, obviously, he's learned something. He was up front in his seven furlong debut. I like that as well. This horse has run two races at seven furlongs. Going out to a mile is not going to be that difficult for him. He's run just, you know, the very long sprint, so he should be able to handle that. There's just others. You really can't go wrong almost with anything in here. Rich Strike is kind of interesting. Horse that flashed speed in a maiden claiming race at Churchill Downs was claimed out of that race and then went in a race in Keeneland in October, finishing third. they're bringing this horse in, another one that obviously somebody thought enough of to put the money down, and then now they're going to try Stakes Waters. Had a rough beginning in the traffic he tripped last time out, so Rich Strike probably deserves another chance. Could be a long shot price there on the number seven horse on the springboard. So it should be a very interesting race, and it's a key race in this event because you have to hit it, obviously, to keep plugging along to get the money for the primetime pick four tonight, which we've seeded with a guaranteed $200,000 pool. So something to shoot at late at night when I believe will be about it once it gets going tonight in the primetime pick four as far as thoroughbred tracks are concerned in North America. So jump in.
Well, it's an 11:28 Eastern time post for the springboard tonight, 10:28 Central. Before that, at about 11 o'clock, the trapeze for the fillies. And big, bulky, interesting field in here. And one thing that I thought was really notable, looking at this group, Dale, look how experienced this field is. You've got fillies making their sixth, fifth, fourth, fifth, sixth, fifth, sixth, eighth, fifth, fifth, and fourth starts. There's only one horse. McPeak comes in with Park on the Nile, horse actually we talked about with Kenny, came up last week. The only horse that's got modest experience, a first-out winner at Churchill on the Stars of Tomorrow 2 card. But this is an experienced bunch for two-year-olds.
Yeah, and they've been having at it, a lot of them, since back midsummer, even earlier summer. So
yeah,
it's kind of an interesting take where the springboard, a lot of those horses haven't really gotten started till the fall. A lot of these fillies have been getting after it for many, many months, and there's plenty of experience there. So it's going to be interesting. What did Kenny McPeak tell you about Park on the Nile? Because we had heard that he may be scratching this horse. I don't know if they did not make the trip or what the story is.
Well, I'll reach out to Kenny, but this was a week ago Monday that we were just kind of going through. Yeah, we were going through basically the barn and catching up on a bunch of horses. So it wasn't timely information, but just, you know, this was a filly that he's got, you know, they think highly of. That was the send up. But I'll check with Kenny as we talk. I'll tell you who you can talk about that I'm very curious. I got such respect for, you know, for C.R. Trout and Hits Pricey Legacy, the slideshow winner in mid-November. Here's an Oklahoma bred. It's going to be a square price, and Trout is very clever.
Yeah, he is, and he usually doesn't run him out of place unless he thinks he has something. And Hits Pricey Legacy won easily, first time out here at Remington Park in late August in State Bred Company at a 5-furlong distance. So obviously start figuring out if he could stretch this horse out, and she's managed to do that. She's learned on the go. She tried open company on the Oklahoma Derby undercard, finished second at the Gaylord Memorial, $50,000 stakes on that day, went back to State Bred's. Did not win the Oklahoma Classics Lassie for the two-year-old fillies. Finished second in there behind Morning Twilight, who's also in this race. Who's a high dollar horse out of the Steve Asmussen barn for West Point Thoroughbreds et al. Then comes back and wins the state bred race in the slideshow at a mile, coming from just off of it. So CR's obviously had his people working tough with this horse, trying to figure out what she is and how to get her to go. And we'll see if she can pick up some pieces, if not go on and get it done tonight. She had a very nice workout in early December, about a week or so ago, by Den's Legacy, who's had great success in Oklahoma bred ranks, at least as a new sire here. So a lot of different things to watch. And CR, he is such an astute breeder. He holds on to his brood, his fillies and mares once they race out, and he knows which ones he wants to keep, and he really checks into the breeding. And he tries to get it the right match and so on and so forth. And he does it all. So when he starts a horse, it's you know, he gets it all. He gets the breeder money, the trainer money, and the owner money as well. So he must think something enough of this horse to give her a shot. His Pricey Legacy. Jose Alvarez, by the way, congrats to him. Mini milestone, if you want to call that. Hit his 500th career win last night. So congrats to him as he tries to continue success in his career. But, yeah, field of 12 going a mile in the trapeze. And for those not familiar with Remington Park, it's not, you know, a death wish being on the outside at a mile. Our finish line, start line for the mile, we're a 1-mile oval, It's not right up against the turn, but you know you need to know what you're doing pretty quick because you don't have a lot of time to make your decision. So you're either going to send or you're going to try to move over and save ground and get behind and come through. And optionality on the outside, Steve Askew's some train, Jose Ortiz knows what he's doing. And he rode this horse out of Zia, so he's been around the country to handle this one. And you know, I'm sure Zia's a little bit different than what he rides up in the New York circuit or in Florida. So he's figured some things out with optionality, and I'm really interested to watch this one, who flashes speed but did come from slightly off of it last time out from the rail post at Zia in a six-horse field. So Jose is going to either have to send or try to work some magic through the traffic from that outside post in going a mile at Remington Park.
Well, you know, and I'll just point out, Dale, actually, that was Irad that rode him at Zia. And,
oh, I'm sorry, his brother. I should say
his brother was riding. And Jose's, you know,
Steve, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Jose's, you know, his inclination is to go, he's a little more aggressive. Irad likes to take everything back, but we'll see. I can tell you, though, from Kenny McPeak, their optionality will be leaving from the 11 hole because Park on the Nile will scratch out of tonight's trapeze.
All right. So there you go. We've confirmed that on your show. Congratulations. Thank you for that.
Not at all.
Breaking news. How about that?
Exactly. Breaking news. You know, I talked about the She's All In yesterday, and what a cool situation for Donnie Kay and Mr. Zellner that She's All Wolf will try to win her dam's namesake event. I love this. She's All Wolf trying to win for her mom.
And She's All Wolf, very solid. She's very consistent. She doesn't always win, but she's almost always in the money. This will be start number 21. She's a four-year-old, so kind of a throwback. She runs an open company. She runs an Oklahoma Bred Stakes company or allowance company quite a bit. And she must be very sturdy like her mom because she doesn't miss a lot of dances. She gets after it. It would be really cool to see her pick up the She's All In with her mom, the namesake, for this race, a graded winner and a millionaire before she retired, and obviously cranking out some nice babies as a broodmare now. Last time for She's All Wolf, a little bit disappointing, had the lead coming down the stretch in a 7-furlong stay-bred allowance, and gave out just at the end, caught by Lady Orchid, another horse who was highly thought of in the stay-bred ranks here at Remington Park for the last year or so. Only lost by a nose. She's All Wolf, pretty smart, but she may not even realize she lost that race, so she's coming right back in and probably pretty confident in her mind, and Richard Aramia picking up a couple more wins last night will give her a solid ride for Donnie Von Himmel and Dr. Zellner in this one.
I love it. Who else you like in here?
Brad Cox, if he sends something to Remington Park, you better pay attention. He's won the last three Oklahoma Derbies. He's got a couple of horses scattered about in the card tonight. Marion Francis, morning line favorite, looks to be awfully tough in here, I think, with wins at Keeneland recently. State bred out of Pennsylvania, running open company and state bred races there at Parks. Third in a stakes race against state breds, and a third in an open company race there as well. Has tried a few places here and there. He's trying to find a place where she fits, but whenever he sends one in, whether he's trying to figure out where she fits or he's ultimately confident in it, you have to pay attention. Marion Francis looks to be awfully tough here. Paige Ann, kind of an interesting one. Sophie Doyle coming back to ride tonight. I'm happy to see her coming back in, even if it's just for one night. She had a solid season, her only full season here a year ago at Remington Park. Paige Ann was second in the Remington Park Oaks as a three-year-old last year in 2020, and then we didn't see her again. She went back out to California, just had a few races out there, mostly in stakes. All but one was in a stakes event, and she's fared well, but she hasn't won. But she continues to plug along and land in the money more often than not, and they're bringing her back in to try Remington Park one more time at a mile and 70. And Sophie rode this horse in the Oaks last year, so she doesn't have a lot of experience with Paige Ann, but she knows her enough, and I guarantee she remembers her. So I always like watching Sophie ride. I learned watching her last year here. She's usually very patient. She doesn't panic, and she's very calming on the horses, and she gives them a really good shot to win. And if they're giving her something on the racetrack, she's going to put him in a good spot. So I'm interested to see how Paige Ann does in the She's All In tonight, race number 10.
5-1, and John Innes takes the blinkers off. Rather than talk about the two Oklahoma bred races, I do want to ask you, Dale, before we wrap, the state bred allowance, that's the anchor leg, the fillies and mares going a mile. So we've got three straight and 1 mile events, and race 13, the anchor leg of the pick four, that, as you mentioned, got a nice guarantee. It's a healthy $200,000 guarantee you slapped on it. What do we do in that nightcap?
Yeah, kind of a monkey wrench thrown at you, right? You get stakes, yeah. Race, stakes, race, stakes, race. Oh, by the way, here's the race you have to hit to cash. staying at the mile, 11 in the field. Pearly, Boyd Caster, Joby Caster training this one. I picked that one on top. Rob Diego riding here locally. Lost the rider right out of the gate last time. Like three strides, awkward break, Lane Leslie Road. Never had the balance. The horse literally took one step out of the door and started to go sideways. I think bumped another, and that was it. And Leslie was off, and Pearly lost all chance, obviously. Stepping up, was trying to step up last time into allowance company in that race, and was played at 7-2. So don't forget Pearly, just because she lost the rider last time. Don't discount her. Tasman, I kind of like. This is a horse that's improved and trying to move back up out of lower claiming levels. Has rattled off two consecutive wins. Others in there, Seeing Double is going to be a price. Brent Davidson's had one of his better seasons at Remy Farkey. He's a local trainer, mostly Oklahoma breds. Seeing Double's another one trying to step back up, but drops back into Oklahoma bred company, but moving into an allowance race. Freddie Manrique may be able to pick up a few pieces with this one, and who knows if it shapes up just enough right, may be able to pass them all in the stretch. So it's really a wide open race. I marked six in there I thought had a possibility in my little brain. So we'll see what happens with this field of 11 to hopefully cash a big ticket to wrap up the Remix Park season.
Well, another good year, and of course, it also, I guess, technically, can we say. With Scott, does this end Scott's tenure too, Scott Wells?
Yeah, we expect to see Scott probably in the winner's circle a couple times tonight. We had a nice little celebration retirement function for him. I want to say it was 2 weeks ago, sometime earlier in this month. So, yeah, his run at Remington Park is going to come to an end. I'm sure he's not done. He's probably got something already cooking to keep going. I don't see Scott just hanging around doing nothing, because that's not his way. So we wish him all the best in an official retirement away from being the president and GM at Remington Park, as he has been now since early 2005, longest tenured in Remington Park history. So he's had a very solid run and has done a lot for Remington Park and Oklahoma Bred Racing, guiding us into the early days of the casino world when the casino opened in 05, and then watching things improve with the racing product ever since, which is what was hoped for once that casino came in. So all good, and we wish all the best to Scott after tonight's races are over.
Well, one of the most respected racetrack executives in the game and amongst his era, his peers, and we wish him nothing but the best. He's tough to drag to the microphone, to be honest. I've asked a handful of times, can we get a big send off? And he's very reticent. He's very funny that way. He's not a limelight type. So we'll, from afar, we thank Scott Wells for all kinds of contributions to the industry. Dale will be watching tonight and betting and looking forward. This is a nice card, and I appreciate the visit.
Well, remember, everybody, we start early tonight. We're normally your late-night show for racing at night across North America, but we go earlier tonight, 4 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, with a 13-race card. We're going to start up a little bit early. I've been telling the locals on different media events all week long, don't go home from work, just come on out. And so do the same. Those of you playing your races in other time zones in the afternoon, just remember we're going to fire up early, so you have an early chance to jump in the pick five early on. Race one starts there, and the earlier pick four, and so on, leading up to the stakes races towards the end of the card.
Some really good racing to end the season at Remington. The Dale Day on your Twitter. Dale, thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve. Good luck, everybody.
Dale Day. And, of course, with Remington coming to a close, you know what that means. Not that far off for SHRP, Sam Houston Race Park. And we have their new track announcer joining us. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Are you getting used to being introduced as track announcer, Nick Tamaro?
I feel as if I to show that I can do it effectively, at least for a couple of nights before I'll wear the hat. But no, it's nice. It's nice to hear. It's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. I'm getting ready for the season in a few different ways, and got my binoculars, a new upgraded set, and they're not necessarily new, but I'm going over to the fairgrounds on the 27th for the day and going to practice calling races that day because I'm a past performance kind of guy, so I don't want to stand there on January 6th not ready or having not called a race longer than 400 yards or in 5 months. So that's my plan. That's my prep season. So luckily it's an easy trip from Houston, but now I'm very, very excited. And so, yeah, we're glad to have a lot of the Remington Park regulars come on down, and looks like the jockey colony starting to fill in a little bit, and just got a few 4 or 5 new barns that are going to have horses there. Some that have shipped in periodically, like Tom Amos, he's got, I think, 20 stalls. Greg Green's got some stalls. Mike Beeler. Martha didn't mention in her story, but I feel as if I heard Brittany Vandenberg was bringing some horses down. I'm not sure if that still was happening, but I will find out from Frank. And Frank and I are due for our visit with you before the meet starts, probably that first week in January. So, yeah, getting exciting. Well, first draw is 2 weeks from yesterday. So we're a 7-day draw racetrack. So you'll have the morning lines will be out the next day for Thursday and Friday. They'll be out on Tuesday for Saturday. We'll have early finals as well. And if you don't like my race calls, you can comment on my morning line making, because I'm sure I will have mistakes in both on occasion.
I'm looking forward to it. We wrap up the broadcast year next Tuesday, and then we'll come back on January 3rd. So we will absolutely. Not only will we do a preview, we're going to have regular handicapping sessions, and I suppose we'll also offer the handicapping stylings of Trey Styles.
I think that will definitely be the case. Yeah, that's there's going to be some of that. I think there's probably a way for us to incorporate his name and in his handicapping proclivity better than using Trey's fave play of the day. But we'll have to figure that out. He's going to have to see if he can do as well with the thoroughbreds as he did with the quarter horses. He's a pretty avid quarter horse handicapper, so we'll see if it plays out. But no, it'll be very exciting. We'll have Jessica Paquette in the mix quite a bit as well of Colonial Downs fame. She, of course, worked for Sam Houston before Colonial Downs. Mostly remotely, but now she'll be coming down 4 times during the meet, including opening weekend and Houston Ladies Classic. So that should be a lot of fun. And we're gonna have a good, hopefully a good amount of coverage. And you know, Thursday nights should be, once we get into the teeth of the card, we're gonna be kind of the only act in town. So it's a pretty Austin Turfway and Little Charlestown, I think, is about it on a Thursday night. So it should be a lot of fun.
Outstanding. We will. Look forward to the first week of January and gearing up for SHRP. And Nick, let's get some opinions in. Before we do that, I promised that I would quiz you and let you riff on yesterday in New York. And I don't know if you poked around at Derby Trail or anywhere else that. Had some success yesterday in the pick 4 and the pick 5. And I wanted to ask you, because I gave out that pick 4 in an all-A play where I had moved Convertible Freeze in the pick 5. I had moved Convertible Freeze from a B in the pick 5 to an A in the pick 4, you know, singled Hagler. So I was 2 by 2 by 1 by 5. Which, you know, $20 for a buck, and for a buck, it brings back $500. I mean, 25 to 1, I thought was a crazy good return on the sequence. And I did not have Convertible Freeze as an A in the pick 5, and I felt bad because the A players for $18, you know, missed out on a $1,000 pick 5 payday. Eucharist to me was an A. And I wanted you to get your opinion about making these decisions, because if you don't have 8-to-1 shots and so forth in your, you know, in your prime play, if you're going to press and you're going to be focused, you really, you're not going to get paydays like this. And what I tried to do that, I mean, I guess is a mistake in the nightcap in the pick five play. I tried to get Vibe Setter in, the Charlie Baker that was going to be a good price. And that was my third choice. And so I used Vibe Setter as an A instead of Convertible Freeze. And, you know, that's the decision. So I guess it's a question. My question is framed as, how do you decide where you're aggressive with prices in your prime play?
No, it's a good question. And it's a good topic as well. One thing I will say, and it's not to cast aspersions at your ticket structure, but I'll never alternate who I use as A's in different pick wagers. So that's one. I mean, if you like them well enough to be an A in the pick four, then you probably, and I understand, I mean, it, sequentially the way they happen is that obviously the pick four happens after the pick five. So if the pick five first leg was one where you were particularly deep and now you're dealing with a pick four, you are a little bit more inclined to maybe incorporate some horses that
right.
you wouldn't have otherwise. So it's, so I get that for sure. But, I think you know, good job laying all of this out. So congratulations, because these are the kind of days at Aqueduct that happen in the winter, right? Where you're going to, you know, you might have the opportunity to hit a pick five that pays $1,000 for 50 cents for, you know, $2. Or something. You're not going to have those big opportunities to hit $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 pick fives, because you're just not going to have the field size, and there's obviously no turf. So these are the days where you really can make a score, because I mean, you had a $2.70 winner, right? And I've said to you on this show before, I mean, one of the pick fives that I've hit, that I hit at Aqueduct a couple of years ago, that I was very fond of, was a sequence where the first winner paid $240 and it paid $8,200. So I mean, you can have that kind of winner and still create a lot of value. So, you know, grading out the A's and B's and C's is very tricky. And there's no magic bullet in terms of some bit of preparation that will help you. What I will say is that what I generally do is take out the B line in my play, and that makes it so that I have to be pretty bold in terms of deciding whether a horse is an A or a C. And so if I'm keen on their win chances, they're going to end up in the A column, while also being, you know, while also understanding that you do hurt yourself in terms of a little bit of equity with each one that you add. But you know, this is a sequence where I think obviously you would have hit it if you made your pick five play, because it would have been all A's into that C. So, I mean, you know, that's pretty much the structure that I would use. But, yeah, I mean, you somehow miss the opportunity to maybe hit it for a couple of bucks by having those all A winners? Yes. And that's what you want to be cognizant of. And I do often think to myself, you know, in looking through a sequence and looking at a particular race, am I being true to my opinion in terms of giving basically a 12 or 15-to-1 shot as much of an opportunity to win as I do a 2 or 3-to-1, but it's going to boil down to how you feel about it, about the race. So, I mean, if you feel strongly enough that the race provides an opportunity for a price horse, then I wouldn't say that, you know, categorically you should say, ah, that horse is a big price, I can't use it as an A, I'm better off using it as a backup. Because what you're then going to do is you're going to lose the opportunity to make money in the chaotic situations where those horses win, and your other opinions might be spot on. So, you know, that's where you're going to really have a chance to hit it a couple of times and maximize your profit based on the investment.
Did you, I'm sure you handicapped, what was your read on, and I guess because, you know, an 11 horse field contributes to this, but how did Eucharist end up 19-to-1?
Yeah, the surprising thing about that race was that you had all of those horses from the the race on November 19th late in the card, and it was a little, actually tweeted and said, I didn't know why Maddie's Marauder was a much shorter price than Indoctrinate, and I probably should have looked through, you know, everybody else who was in there and included Eucharist in that, because, I mean, it was really insane for Maddie's Marauder to be, you know, 2-1 and Indoctrinate be 8-1, and for that matter, Eucharist be 18-1. So they all sort of ran the same kind of sloppy, you know, unimpressive, also ran type of race behind a wire-to-wire winner who, of course, came right back and won again. So there was a little bit more credibility given to Papa Smooth. But, it was very odd. It was very oddly bet. I was watching Marshall Graham and I were at Delta Downs the day that Eucharist ran, and I was giving him some, you know, some tough, friendly love about the quality of the claim of Eucharist. And, of course, he got the last laugh, which generally is the case. But because Eucharist got the money yesterday, and I cannot say whether Marshall bet. I hope he did, but the purse is good enough. And, I was surprised. $39 was a lot. In fact, Anthony and Maggie were talking on Talking Horses, and Anthony brought up Eucharist and said, you know, this is the kind of horse that could win and pay $15. And you're like, man, I really should have included it. And the horse almost paid three times that. So, yeah, it was a big field where I think a few horses got lost, and I do think the public got very wrapped up in the favorite, and Maddie's Marauder really had no appeal that exceeded that of the horses that he ran against last time, and he ended up going off a fraction of the price.
And you know, actually, I put him on top only because he was the most consistent. It seemed to me the horse that you could kind of count on to run the race that he's run most regularly. And to some degree,
Maddie Marauder, you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I mean, you had some droppers too. And it's funny because the droppers, what's interesting is Brachmaninoff, and that was a nice price on Brachmaninoff too, 13-1. And again, this is a function of an 11 horse field, goes a long way. Hangar One was also dropping from 25 to 16. Brachmaninoff was dropping from 30 to 16. So you had a lot of classic handicapping maxims going on here.
Yeah, I think the one that probably shifted the way things shook out was, I don't think anybody expected Run Casper Run to be 5-2. So I don't remember what David made the horse on the morning line, but 5-2 seems particularly short. In fact, I can tell you he made him 6-1 on the morning line. He took a ridiculous amount of money as well. Hangar One probably should have won. He got into a little bit of trouble around the turn and ended up running on well, kind of stuck inside a little bit. But hey, you know, can't take anything away from Eucharist, who ran quite well and got himself into position, and you know, maybe finally is starting to realize that potential he had very early in his career, and it took getting him to the bottom. Michelle Giangiulio, one thing we've seen very clearly is that this might have only been her third winner, but pretty much every one of her horses has run well. So it's been nice to see, and hopefully that's something that continues as her business grows.
2-2 at the meet, actually. I just noticed that Michelle Giangiulio.
2-2 at the meet, both 10-strike winners.
All right. Well done. And I think I saw Marshall tweet that they won two races within 10 minutes of each other.
Did indeed. In fact, both with young trainers that Marshall's given opportunities to. Both were with apprentice jockeys as well. And, you know, as much as his friends might give him a hard time about being, you know, horse ownership welfare, he's given a lot of young trainers like Matt Shire, Jason Barkley, big opportunities, Lindsay Schultz. So yeah, I commend him for it, and Matt Shire's a terrific trainer. Anybody looking for, you know, a really hands-on horseman that's been brought up the right way and knows how to win races, that's who he won at Fairgrounds with a horse named Have No Fear, and of course Michelle in New York has worked for a variety of different trainers, including Tom Morley and Kelly Breen, and now she's out on her own, and her first win came with Seafoam back at Saratoga, and I think Seafoam is slated to run in the Queens County, which is later this month. So that was a horse claim for 45 and came right back and won a stake and then finished third in the Empire Classic behind American Revolution.
There we go.
That's my... Actually, the Queens County Sunday. I'm such an idiot. I didn't even look at the overnight yet.
I haven't looked at Sunday's overnight either. Let's turn our attention to tomorrow. What did we look at? We look at... the Stallion Series races and the sequence?
Yeah, I think they're a lot of fun. You know, I think they're certainly worth conversation. You know, since the extra money was put in, these fields have gotten a lot bigger. I think the second one is probably a little bit likelier to go to a heavy favorite, but I think it's a slightly more interesting race. And the heavy favorite, of course, is going to be Morning Matcha, who comes in off of a couple of wins in a row for Butch Reed. Had a couple of forays into New York racing at Saratoga, running in some of those restricted maiden special weight races, and she ran fine. You know, no harm in the efforts that she put forth. The interesting horse to me is How Do You Make Your Money? And, you know, people are going to see How Do You Make Your Money, and they're going to say, oh, you know, she had to go to the turf, she had to go to the synthetic. Her debut is way better than people realize. She set a very, very fast pace on the inside that day, and the inside was fine. I mean, there was no disadvantage to being down there, but that was a very strong pace. Sue Ellen Mishkin was a really, really impressive winner. So I would give How Do You Make Your Money another opportunity here, now drawn outside of the other pace horses. I think she's got a real chance to potentially upset that race, and it does look like it'll boil down to her and Morning Matcha for the most part. I don't really see a lot of contention beyond those. The other Stallion Series race is interesting as well. It's a much more wide open race. And I think it's an opportunity for Bustin Pietra, who ran well on debut and then came back and had the misfortune of running into Sende, who has this like unbelievable mind meld that he puts on the other horses in the field, and he has to get an easy lead every time he goes to the post. And he went almost 47 despite Bustin Pietra being much faster on paper and on pace figures. With all that griping aside, I do think this is a good horse. And drawn inside, I think he'll have to show a good amount of speed, and that'll certainly make him a pretty clear contender. There's an interesting horse in there from the barn of Genevieve Londano, coming from Churchill Downs. It's going to be ridden by Edgar Morales, who's coming up as well. Second-time starter named Sturdat Pot, who's by Trineberg. Of course, you have to be by a New York Stallion to be in this race. This horse actually ran pretty well in an open maiden special weight race on debut. Was a little green late, probably needed the race. I could see this horse improving and being a factor. This is a barn that I admittedly know very, very little about, but it's hitting at a 32% clip. Small sample size. This is a horse I thought was a little bit interesting as well. Iron Lion and Zion got a huge pace to run on debut. Ended up running down a horse named Agility, who came back and won next time out for Jorge Abreu, so there's probably a little bit of talent there. And the last one I wanted to mention was Un Ojo on the outside, coming up from Delta for trainer Tony Dutrow. This is the second horse we've seen come up that was previously trained by Ricky Corville, another New York bred, of course. This one ran against a good field last time out in the Jean Lafitte, and I think still has some upside as well. Certainly has improved since facing a little bit of weaker foes since that debut at Keeneland, where he had the misfortune of running into Kaylee's brother and Trademark, both of whom look like they're, well, Kaylee's brother's a stakes winner now, and Trademark looks stakes caliber as well.
How about the allowances on either side? The seventh is a starter, and the nightcap is a state bred dash, first level.
Yeah, seventh is really tough. I mean, you've got a few horses in here that are coming in off of layoffs that look like they could contend. I think there's going to be a decent amount of speed, and that should set the table pretty well. Royal Realm was good last time out, first off the claim by Rick Schausberg. I could see him have another forward move in him potentially. I don't necessarily think that he's probably quite as good as he was earlier in his career. I don't know if that matters. And I think he likes Aqueduct well enough to be considered a pretty serious contender here. And he's a morning line favorite, so the expectation is that he's going to run well. I thought that you could make maybe a little bit of a case for Liam's Fire coming back off the bench. I'm a little worried about the return and whether he'll be quite the same. But this horse got very good in his last two starts before going to the sidelines for Amir Chichokli. We'll see if he comes back with the same amount of oomph. You know, I will admit I was annoyed when I looked at the fourth and I saw it was a two other than, and I hoped that Drafted would be in it, because I have this thing for Drafted, and he has been the unluckiest horse I've seen in New York in quite some time. He's gotten no pace set up whatsoever, including in a two other than, and a couple of horses in here are coming out of that was won by Cost Basis. Well, I find out, of course, now that I mentioned to you that I didn't look at the overnight, that Drafted is in the Gravesend on Sunday. And he's in there with Wonder Where Craig Is and Chateau, both of whom were trained by Michael Dubb. It feels like there's virtually no chance they'll run against each other because they both have a ton of speed. But if Drafted somehow is able to get a pace, he's a horse that, I mean, he's long overdue to get a win, and it will happen at some point very, very soon. But that two other things interesting because Happy Medium is now continuing up the class ladder. I wonder if Michelle Nevin and Samantha Siegel considered potentially trying a race like the Gravesend because Happy Medium's win two starts back. It was very, very fast, and the speed figure maybe was a little higher than it needed to be, but this is a horse with a lot of talent, and that's a fun two. Other than he's got the rail, there's other speed in here, so it's going to be a real test. Foolish Ghost should go to the front. What do you think now? Has the speed to stay close? So I think we might see Happy Medium employ some slightly different tactics and come from a little bit off the pace. You mentioned that Nightcap; it's an interesting bunch of New York breds. I think Color Me Potsy is a little bit interesting on the outside. He got off to a very bad start last time, and I think that wrecked his chances. I think he can be in a better position with a cleaner break, and he's going to be a pretty big price as well. I think there's going to be enough pace in there to set the table. I always, of course, temper my enthusiasm as far as the pace getting too fast, but looks like a few opportunities for horses coming from a little bit off of it.
Have you done the pedigree work on that state bred two-year-old that starts to pick five?
I have not. That's one that I have not gotten to. I will admit, though, that knowing the way Bold Journey ran first time out, I'm going to do the pedigree work, but I figured that he would be pretty tough to beat.
Yeah, he's even money, and so we'll see.
Purchase market is so stacked. Horses like this are getting claimed off of maiden defeats now. Are getting purchased off of maiden defeats.
It's funny you brought that up. I was looking at the sheets, and I saw the barn change, and I was like, what's going on here? And I actually was interested too, because Safalo's Mission is a Joe Besseker that I was familiar with. He named it after a fellow fund manager, and was a horse that went through. Besseker trimmed the sales a little bit on his vast holdings at the sale last week, and Safalo's Mission is also a horse that's changed hands. And in the meantime, it wasn't like G Munning that won that maiden race. I think got a 78 buyer. It was like what are we all so excited about?
No, that's the truth. Yeah. Right now in racing, it's funny to me how you buy, you know, what might be good horses. And again, this is something with which I am not familiar. I'm the wrong guest to have on to talk about this. But, you know, from a handicapper's perspective and from an outside observer, it's obvious that the yearling market has gotten to be so out of control price-wise, and it might stay that way for, you know, a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
And so you're looking for other channels. You're looking for... Yep. For lightly raced horses, you know, private purchases. That's, of course, a market where you pay a premium as well, but you're also getting a little bit more of a proven concept than you are a yearling where, you know, you're kind of rolling the dice that this thing might be good, and you're also going to be on the hook for about 18 months worth of bills before the horse runs.
Yeah.
So
yep.
It's a tough way to make a buck, right?
And I think they, you know, you're talking about this group, this is... Cheryl Penny and Gary Barber and Adam Wachtel, you know,
these are among the sharpest private purchasers you're going to find.
And they like right? they like the action. I mean, they enjoy they love having
it. I'm for it. I mean, I think private purchases are great because I think ownership like this group will help quite. Will obviously they love action, and that's also going to help the prior owner, right? The prior owner undoubtedly made good money. And now has the opportunity to go buy more horses that they can either campaign themselves or potentially sell if they look like the type that somebody wants to buy as well. So no, I think from a, you know, from a commerce perspective, that's about as good as it gets.
Everybody wins. You're all winners.
Make it a winning night.
Nick, how was your birthday?
It was terrific. It was appropriately low-key, as it should be at my age, and celebrated quite nicely. So, yes, I'm actually in Dallas. I'm heading back to Houston shortly. And, if anybody, any listeners in the Dallas area, if you've not been to Town Hearth, very, very strong recommendation. My second time there Wednesday night. Very, very hip, cool scene. Dallas and Houston are both good restaurant cities. Houston's better, but Dallas is still very, very solid.
Ooh, them's fighting words. All right. Nick, I don't think, I'm just thinking, we're done Tuesday. So, this may be your last visit of 2021.
Well, I mean, I could certainly find the time to come back on Tuesday if you're
unbelievable. All right, there we go. All right,
if you wanted it, right? I'm gonna make sure that the public gets as much of me as possible. There are a few channels left in racing I've not produced, so
you're not overexposed yet. No,
yeah,
not at all.
I like the caveat there.
We talked. You already gave last Friday. Did we? I'm losing track of time and days. Yeah, we already talked about your experience at Tucson.
Yes, we did. Yeah, it was a good time and enjoyed it. So, yeah, I think it's I look forward to going back in the future. I think it would be a lot of, really, really interesting and informative.
And Tam, 1215, everybody. And Nick, I guess we'll talk next week and handicap something and wrap up the year with you.
We will definitely find something to talk about on Tuesday, my friend. Have a good weekend. Thanks for having me.
The greatest. Nick Tamaro, folks. Let's take a break and Nick's analysis at the In the Money Players Daily for Aqueduct. Let's take a break and we'll go out to Hot Springs. We got Hammer coming. We got Scully. We got Schaap, Mike Welch. Bobby Shoemaker is a scratch. There's car trouble. And so Shu was drafted into having to take Annie to school. So I know that it was Bobby's wife's birthday this week. You saw the birthday greetings. He says the car broke down on the side of the road. You buy her a car for her birthday. Come on. Come on, Shu. back after this, we'll check in with Hammer. Twin Spires weekend preview at the races, Sirius XM. Stay with us.